Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, June 18th, 2015. The UN's chief peacekeeper says South Sudan's government has blocked UN peacekeepers from doing their job.
We felt that we needed to do a better job to protect civilians. We needed attack helicopters. Request denied. We needed UAVs. Request denied by the president to me personally three times last year.
And for the second year running, a U.S. think tank put South Sudan at the top of the list of fragile states.
We look at the social pressures, the economic pressures, the political and security pressures. South Sudan it has the most overall pressures based on our assessment.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's relationship with the United Nations continues to be strained. The UN's peacekeeping chief had some harsh words of criticism for South Sudan's leaders for their treatment of UN personnel in the country, saying President Salva Kiir and his government have denied repeated requests for the UN mission to use equipment needed to protect civilians. VOA's Margaret Bashir has this report from the United Nations.
Hervé Ledsous laid out to the UN Security Council the problems that his 12,000 troops, police, and civilian personnel in South Sudan have been experiencing because of the government's ongoing lack of cooperation.
I see a country, and I can be very candid, that country is South Sudan, a country where we felt that we needed to do a better job to protect civilians. We needed attack helicopters. Request denied. We needed UAVs. Request denied by the president to me personally three times last year.
Ledsous said the mission's movements have also been restricted. Also troubling, the South Sudan government is finding new ways to harass and intimidate mission personnel.
Juba did declare some of our senior personnel non grata. If you look at the fact that yesterday it was announced that from now on, UN personnel who are taking pictures will be considered as spies, well, I think this raises a number of concerns.
Among the senior staff in South Sudan who were recently told they were no longer welcome was Toby Lanzer, the deputy head of mission and the UN's humanitarian coordinator. The government accused him of being outspoken about the economic and humanitarian situation in the country, where 4.6 million people face severe food insecurity and more than 2 million have been displaced from their homes and villages. For over a year, the UN has been sheltering more than 100,000 civilians who have sought protection at hastily set up camps inside UN bases in some of the worst affected areas. The civilians are fleeing fighting that ignited after a political rivalry between President Salva Kiir and his former vice president Riek Machar escalated into open conflict in December 2013. Tens of thousands have died since, and the two men have not heeded international warnings to adhere to a ceasefire deal made in January 2014 and start working towards a transitional government. The UN Secretary General held a special high-level meeting on the crisis on the sidelines of the annual UN meetings in New York last September. President Kiir, who was in town, snubbed the gathering by not showing up. The UN Security Council has repeatedly threatened the spoilers with sanctions and dangled the possibility of an arms embargo, but has so far only set up the legal mechanism for imposing sanctions. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
In response to the criticism at the UN yesterday, President Kiir's spokesperson says the issue is one of sovereignty. Ateni Wekateni told South Sudan in Focus that some of the equipment isn't needed in South Sudan.
You cannot bring drones. Yeah, there's no Al-Qaeda in South Sudan. There's no any terrorists that they will come and deal with in South Sudan. So why do they want to bring drones? What is it that they want a drone to be brought to South Sudan?
Ateni says the restriction on UN personnel taking photos is a practical one in a country that is virtually at war.
We cannot allow our military installations to be photoed. This is a universally practiced norms. That military installation should not be photoed or even to come closer to them, to inspect them. It's not allowed. If that is what some individual from own mission does, then they are actually getting out of their mandate.
Despite the harsh words from Hervé Ladzou yesterday, Atenei insists Juba is cooperating with the UN, although he insists there are limits to the UN's role.
We commend their work. We appreciate whatever they do in support of the government of South Sudan, because the mandate of the UNMISS is to support and complement the government role. When it comes to the point of looking at the sovereignty of the Republic of South Sudan, anything that will undermine the sovereignty is not acceptable.
Atenei Wekatenei is the spokesperson for President Kiir. He spoke with VOA fellow Tito Justin earlier today from Juba. For the second year in a row, South Sudan finds itself at the top of the Fragile States Index, which is compiled by the Washington, D.C.-based Fund for Peace, or FFP. FFP's Nate Haken led the team that put together this year's index. He spoke with South Sudan in Focus's Karen Zeitvogel about how the list is compiled and why South Sudan is in the number one slot again.
We look at the social pressures, the economic pressures, the political and security pressures. Some of the indicators are things like refugee IDPs. We look at things like factionalization of the elites. We look at the extent to which a particular state might be highly dependent on external aid to fulfill its functions as a state. Our basic theory is that when the pressures are very high, it just puts more strain on society to maintain equilibrium and promote sustainable security for the people. South Sudan it has the most overall pressures based on our assessment.
Is there a single criterion that pushed South Sudan deeper into the red, if you like, or that kept it at the top of the list for another year?
I mean, there were a number of factors. The food crisis was certainly very significant. According to the UN, it's the food insecurity in South Sudan is among the top in the world, as well as the political factionalization, as well as the displacement and the violence. This index it looks at the totality of all of these pressures across all of these sectors.
What can South Sudan do to get off that number one spot?
Well, a major lesson that we've learned with the international community is that state building is not an automatic thing. The other lessons that I take from looking around at the index over this last year is that people have a say. It is a big challenge, but people can defy the odds with strong leadership, with participatory consensus building, and the support from those who can provide that support. South Sudan can move beyond the levels of fragility that it's experiencing right now.
Haken of the Fund for Peace, which has compiled the Failed States Index for the last 11 years. Haken spoke to Karen Zeitvogel earlier today in Washington, D.C. Central Equatoria State's governor accused the leader of his state's Bari community of instigating the state's rising insecurity before officials had blamed cattle keepers from other states for most of the criminal activity. But Governor Clement Wani Konga says members of the Bari community have been provoking factions within his own Mundari community, hoping to force him out of office. Waki Simon Wudu has the details for VOA from Juba. We're having some technical difficulties, as you may have assumed. We will try to get this next story to you. Stick with us. Yesterday, we told you about how workers on the Twick East County Dike were threatening to walk off the job if they didn't get paid. Well, today, Jungle-A's Finance Ministry released the remaining funds needed to complete work on the refurbished 26-kilometer dike. As Jacob Bacek reports, we hope for VOA from Boer, officials hope the dike will prevent health facilities and schools from being destroyed by flooding. We apologize to you, our listeners, for those technical difficulties we're having right now. We're going to try again to give you the report on Central Equatoria State's governor being accused, the leader of his state's Bari community, of instigating the state's rising insecurity there, before officials had blamed cattle keepers from other states for most of the criminal activity. Here, we hope, is Waki Simon Wudu with the details.
Konga held a news conference this morning after other Central Equatoria lawmakers met with him yesterday to share their concerns about rising insecurity along state highways. Konga, a member of the Mundari community, accused the executive leadership of the Bari community, or BC, of being involved in ongoing criminal activities in some parts of the state.
The BC is instigating the Bari people against the Mundari people, and this has been demonstrated at the beginning of this year by shooting of cattle in Digeri, which led to the deaths of Nashar, 12 people. There are Bari, there are Mundari, there are Dinga. This was wrong.
12 people were shot earlier this year in January in Korejik, one of the villages in northern Juba, when suspected armed cattle keepers attacked the area. Previously, Konga blamed the state's insecurity on armed cattle keepers from other states. President Salva Kiir has ordered all cattle keepers within the region of Equatoria to relocate to grazing areas in their home states. Now, Konga says threats of insecurity are coming from other parts of the community. He says he ordered the arrest of two men from the Bari community, whom he identified as Dr. Pio and Honorable John Lodo. Konga says the two are instigating violence between the Mundari and Bari communities. Konga says the Bari community, or BC, is purposely stirring up trouble to try to force his ouster.
They have gone to the president. They want me to be changed. I said, okay, come to the president. I see that you are being pressed by the Bari people to change me. Let me go home. So that peace can exist. The president told me that even if you go home, but the same problem is going to occur. When when Equatoria was decentralized in 1993, all the governors were from here. Did the Mundari complain? Did the Kakwa complain? Did the Kuku complain? No, they have never complained. We accepted that. He who is appointed is our leader.
Professor George Breng, a lawmaker in the national legislature and a member of the Bari community, denies any BC involvement in recent violence.
The Bari cannot create insecurity because the Bari don't have militias. If anything, it is the governor himself who is creating insecurity. All the people causing this havoc are the Mundari. Now he goes ahead to accuse the community as if they are causing the insecurity. This is completely very strange.
Breng dismisses Konga's claims of being targeted because of his ethnicity.
Kremen is trying to create problems to divert issues. He thinks he's going to be removed. No one to blame it on the Bari. The Bari has nothing to do with him in power, being outside in power.
In recent months, lootings of property along Juba Yei, Juba Kajokeji, Juba Rokon, and Juba Terkeka roads by armed men have been on the rise. Travelers have often complained about an increase in criminal activities along these roads. Konga also blames insecurity along the Juba Yei road on suspected rebels aligned with the former vice president Riek Machar's deputy Alfred Ladu Gore. But Konga also acknowledged the presence of gangs within Juba, where many people feel their lives are threatened. He says a new group of gangs consisting of South Sudanese and Ugandan men have been terrorizing the capital, and says 7 men have been arrested.
During our security meeting of last yesterday, it was resolved that the state commissioner have to intensify the highway patrolling to thwart the criminals from carrying out such activities of looting people from of money, of telephones, and so on.
Annual efforts by both the Central Equatoria State and national authorities to minimize insecurity within Juba have so far not yielded much result. Residents regularly complain about night lootings and robberies. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Yesterday, we told you about how workers on the Twickies County Dike were threatening to walk off the job if they didn't get paid. Well, today, Jungle-A's finance ministry released the remaining funds needed to complete work on that project. As Jacob Pacek reports for VOA from Bor, officials hope the refurbished dike will prevent health facilities and schools from being destroyed by flooding.
In April, the state government approved 420,000 South Sudanese pounds for the dike. Half of the money was released to the county commission in May. that money was spent on material and workers' pay weeks, but for several weeks now. Workers have not been paid and the project has sat idle. PG's County Commissioner Dao Akoy-Jurkoy says now that they have received the beginning £210,000, workers will be paid by June 30th.
The 420 is received successfully. So after that, we are going to continue the work. At the end, we are going to finish so that to make sure that the 20 kilo of the dike have been rehabilitated.
Akoy says they begin work on the dike from Dina through areas of Ayual, Kongor, and Fakir. They have also come closer to Panyaj at the border of Bor County. He said they are almost finishing refurbishing 20 kilometers of dike, which is stretched across 5 Payam in Twichis County. The government chief whip Deng Ajeng Duot says the dike APEC is cool, health facilities and food security.
The western part of the area has always been flooding and the schools and health facilities are being left if it is not destroyed. This year, we hope with the rehabilitation that is taking place now, things will get better and those schools will be operating.
Deng says when flooding occurs, roads are washed away. He said before the crisis began in late 2013, heavy flooding destroyed the road that connect Panyago to Wernyol Payam. But with the newly repaired dike, people will have access to road again.
The road from Jonglei headquarters here to the county, it has been washed out. But with the little resources of the county, the commissioner has done his best by repairing the road.
See, in 2006, when a primary dike was built along the Nile River in Twichis, the county administration had usually performed temporary repairs, which they hoped would remain in place through the rainy season. But this year, county officials are counting on the extensive repair to remain in place for at least 10 years. Commissioner Akoy says they need the help of the United Nations Development Program, or UNDP, and the National Ministry of Water and Irrigation to find a permanent solution to the dike. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
The UN Refugee Agency says worldwide, displacement from wars, conflict, and persecution is at the highest level ever recorded. And it's getting worse. The UNHCR has released its annual Global Trends report, which says nearly 60 million people were forcibly displaced at the end of 2014. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The UNHCR describes the level of displacement as a dangerous new era that dwarfs anything seen before. Spokesman Babar Balush explains.
It's really a sad reality of the world that we are living in today. I mean, last year in 2014, there were 59.5 million people that were forced out of their homes, either as internally displaced people, or they were forced to leave their countries and cross an international border, or they needed to seek asylum somewhere.
The Global Trends report, entitled World at War, says that in region after region, the number of refugees and internally displaced people is on the rise. It says in the past 5 years, at least 15 conflicts have erupted or reignited. 8 of them are in Africa, 3 in the Middle East, 1 in Europe, and 3 in Asia. Balooch says one country has been the main driver of the upward trend since 2011.
The highest numbers that we are seeing in terms of people that are displaced is the Syrian Arab Republic. So with that, we have 15 million people that are affected in Syria and Iraq with that. And Syria today is the highest refugee-producing country with the conflict now entering its fifth year almost.
Some 7.6 million Syrians are displaced within the country. About 3.9 million are refugees in neighboring countries and elsewhere. Afghanistan, which has suffered over three decades of conflict, is the number two producer of refugees, with nearly 2.6 million. Hundreds of thousands are displaced within the country. Afghanistan is followed by Somalia, producing more than 1 million refugees.
Adding to that, You have new conflicts. Ukraine was there last year that started. We now have Yemen as a new conflict. Things are heating up in Iraq again. South Sudan, Central African Republic, and Burundi is the new one. So there seems to be no end to the conflicts that the world is dealing with.
Baluch says donor aid is not keeping pace with the rising number of conflicts.
The resources that we humanitarians have are getting limited and limited. How are we going to deal with the millions when the resources are just not there? Last year, UNHCR asked for over $6 billion to deal with the refugee crises around the world, and we got half of it.
He says aid should also be given to countries shouldering the refugee burden as hosts, such as Turkey, Iran, Pakistan, Ethiopia, and others. The UNHCR spokesman highlights problems contributing to displacement.
There needs to be political will to find solution for these conflicts. Number two is we humanitarians have reached a point where we just are not able to clear the mess that the global politics is creating today. So if we are supposed to take care of these poor people, women and children that have suffered too much, we need to have resources. Number three, countries need to keep their borders open for these people.
He says half the world's displaced are under age 18. Many are minors, separated from their families. UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres, says we are witnessing a paradigm change, an unchecked slide into an era in which the scale of global forced displacement, as well as the response required, is dwarfing anything seen before. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
This Saturday, June 20th, is World Refugee Day, and today the UN Refugee Agency held a public discussion in Juba to highlight the suffering of refugees. Officials admitted the challenges of supporting refugees during conflicts is becoming more and more difficult as donor funding dwindles and the numbers of displaced people increases. Megumi Davis-Rakawinj has this report for VOA from Juba.
Today's roundtable discussion included humanitarian workers and refugees, including Omot Obang Kot, who fled from Ethiopia to what was then southern Sudan 12 years ago. Kot says he was 18 when he walked more than 100 kilometers from Ethiopia's Gambela region to Jonglei State. Kot says he faced two main challenges when he arrived in Juba in 2004.
I couldn't find out how to speak this Arabic Juba, and also place where to stay, you know, because there were no people whom I knew here. So I find friends, stay with them, but a time, just they do help to say that, please stay here. Then at another time, I go and ask from somebody.
Kot completed primary school in Ethiopia and was able to move on to the secondary level thanks to humanitarian organizations and UN Humanitarian Agency. He is now a teacher at Igodo Primary School in the Gorom camp that is currently sheltering more than 2,200 refugees from Ethiopia. Kot is glad he is able to serve his people and also earn a living. But he admits that life as a refugee remains difficult.
I really missed my mother, my relatives, and even my brothers, whom I really don't communicate to them because there's no means of communication. I really don't know where they're about. I'm still finding way and means of finding them, if at least I can get them so that I speak to them and hear their voice say that I become happy once in my life.
The chairperson of South Sudan's Commission for Refugees says he also knows what it is like to be a refugee. Paulino Paida says the commission is working with partners to ensure that people such as Kot study in vocational schools.
This is an asset that one will never part with until death. Since this region is prone to refugees over and over, probably the skill is the only asset we can capitalize on for our children. Because I myself would have been refugee several times in my life and I've lost everything. But the skill that I acquired is what keeps, you know, making me who I am today as I speak to you.
Paida says he became a refugee when he was very young. In 1969, he says his family was forced to flee to what was then known as Zaire, but is now the Democratic Republic of Congo. Paida took French lessons, which helped him land steady work with humanitarian agencies as an interpreter. Gregory Beck works with the UN Refugee Agency. He says the current crisis has even made it difficult to help determined, resilient people like Kot. Beck says roads have been cut because of insecurity, forcing the UN and other agencies to airlift aid, which is extremely expensive. He says these costs deprive both refugees and host communities of essential facilities like schools and hospitals. Beck also says refugees face other serious problems.
When conflict comes to areas hosting refugees, when armed groups move through areas, there's also a tragic rise in forced recruitment of refugees, including children, as well as abuses against refugees, physical abuses, and that can include gender-based violence against refugee women.
There are currently close to 270,000 refugees in South Sudan. They come from a number of neighboring countries, including Sudan, the DRC, Ethiopia, and the Central African Republic. The UN Refugee Agency says they have only about a quarter of the $414 million needed to fund take care of refugees in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you were to suddenly get some money, what would you spend it on?
I'll invest it in starting my own business, and also I'll invest it in my lady for her to also start her own business. Yes, I think that's what I'll do for now.
On my education, because I want to be a lecturer in the future, so I'm striving hard to get to that place.
I'll go to school and pursue new knowledge and learn new things to better myself.
I will open a playing center for children, a recreational center, where like over the weekends, like Saturday, Sunday, you can bring your child to have fun, then you take her back or him back. That's what I've been dreaming of. Yeah, this is what we don't have here.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Well, that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter is gold.
That's, of course, Bob Marley with the song Get Up, Stand Up. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Most people think great God will come from the sky.